heard a lot of talks in the past few days, and presumably we'll hear more in the next few days, about Molosena's conjecture and about the very interesting results that have been derived from it, both for field theories and for quantum gravity. For the purpose of my talk, I would like to take a slightly more skeptical attitude and ask what are the actual tests that this conjecture is correct. And in particular, I will treat this conjecture as a duality between field theories and examine what is the direct evidence that this duality is actually correct. And this work will partly be based on these papers and mainly on many other papers by others, and I apologize in advance for any references that I may miss. And I'm going to try to review all of the evidence as far as I can see for the conjecture actually being correct. I will limit my discussion only to the field theory aspects of the duality. This is mostly because we don't really understand quantum gravity well enough to be able to get any quantitative tests of the duality out of it. And I will also ignore all of the many qualitative tests of the duality. For instance, the fact that the theory on ADS space exhibits confinement and mass gap and so on in the appropriate regimes, because these tests only seem to show that the two theories are in the same universality class, but not that they're actually the same theory. And I will also, mostly due to lack of time, focus only on cases of conformal theories in three dimensions or more. And we have heard and we'll hear in other talks in this conference about the other cases. So I'll start by a brief review of what the conjecture is, which is probably not needed by now, but just to make sure that everyone remembers it. So the simplest case of the conjecture is the equivalence between the type 2B string theory on ADS 5 plus S5 and the N equals 4 four-dimensional UN Cyprian-Mills theory. The theory on the left-hand side has two parameters, which are the radius in string units and the string coupling, and these are related to the on the right-hand side to the rank N of the Young-Mills gauge group and to the Young-Mills coupling in by the following formulas that we've seen many times. And there are similar relations between M theory on ADS 7 cross S4 and on ADS 4 cross S7 and appropriate conformal theories in six dimensions and in three dimensions. Now, this relation may be derived by starting from two different descriptions of p-brain solitons in string theory. One description which treats them as solitonic solutions of supergravity and presumably also of the full string theory or M theory, and the other description which treats these solitons as at least in the four-dimensional case, as d-brains or as open strings that are coupled to bulk closed strings. And then one takes the limit where alpha prime goes to zero, or more generally, L prime goes to zero. And in that limit, in both of these theories, we seem to get a decoupled bulk free theory on flat space, and another sector which seems to be given by the two theories that I mentioned previously. Now, this derivation apparently seems to give an equivalence between these theories for any values of n and g string. But it is certainly more convincing for large n and large g string times n when the left hand side is purely supergravity, and then we're pretty sure that we know exactly what it is. While in the case where we need to put in stringy corrections and so on, then it's not completely clear that the theory on the left hand side is really well defined. Now, some people will treat this derivation as a proof, and in that case, of course, no additional tests of the conjecture need to be made, and these people can ignore the rest of my talk. But it seems to me like this derivation is not really completely rigorous, and while it is very suggestive for a relation between the two theories, it would be nice to have as many direct tests of this conjecture as we can. Now, there are several different possibilities for what the statement of the conjecture actually is. The strongest conjecture one can make based on the derivation and similar arguments is that the two theories are equivalent for any value of n and of g string. So there is a relation between the parameters of the two theories for any value of n and g string, and that is the strongest possible statement. And this is a very strong statement, in particular for n equals 1, the field theories on the right-hand side are free theories, which implies that on the left-hand side, string theory, say on an ADS 5 cross S5 of Planck scale, would have no bulk states at all. So certainly this conjecture is a very strong one. A weaker version of the conjecture is that the two theories are equivalent only in the limit of large n, but with fixed g string times n, which is the fifth limit in the gauge theory. And in this case, the 1 over n corrections, for instance, to both theories need not necessarily be the same. And the weakest version of the conjecture, which is that the two theories are only equivalent for large n and large d squared n, and then even the alpha prime corrections on both sides, the alpha prime corrections need not be equivalent to the 1 over d squared n corrections in the gauge theory. Now, of course, it would be nice to have a direct test of all these possibilities, and in particular of the finite n possibility, but unfortunately, almost all of the tests that have been done so far of the duality really only test the third and weakest version, namely that the two theories are equivalent for large n and large d squared n, as I'll try to convince you. Now, how do we do this comparison? So again, we've heard this already in several talks, so I'll be brief in exactly how it is done. So it was shown by Dubcevic, Tamanov, Polyakov, and by Wooden how one can get from a theory on ADS space to a conformal field theory by identifying the boundary values of fields on the ADS space with the couplings to conformal field theory operators, and thus identifying the generating functional for correlation functions in a conformal field theory with the partition function of string theory or M theory with some given boundary values for the fields. And the simplest relation is the relation between the mass of a field on ADS space and the dimension of the corresponding operator in the conformal field theory. And we've heard this already, so I won't go into this. So this correspondence allows us to, given a theory on ADS space, to construct a corresponding conformal field theory. And I will assume that this indeed gives rise to a consistent conformal field theory on the boundary, although this has not really been proven. So then we get one conformal field theory from the string theory or M theory on ADS space, and we have another conformal field theory, which is the lower energy limit of string theory or of the theory on these brains, for instance, the UM Supriang-Mills theory. And the conjecture would state that these theories are exactly the same, namely that all of their operators and correlation functions are exactly the same. So how can we test this conjecture? Of course, we immediately run into the usual problem in strong weak coupling dualities that in general, we cannot compare quantities in the different theories, because in the gauge coupling, for instance, we can only compute quantities for small g squared n, while on the supergravity side, we really so far know only how to compute things for large g squared n. So what we can do is basically only to test things that do not really depend on g squared n, various chiral properties of the theories. And so in principle, we could have been able to compare these also for finite n, and that's what we usually do in field theory. But in this case, since on the supergravity side, we really only know how to control the theory for large n, then all we can really do, at least in most tests, is to compare for large n properties of these conformal theories that do not depend on g squared n. And for this reason, these tests would only test the very weak conjecture that the theories are actually the same for large n and large g squared n. And they do not really show us that the 1 over n corrections or the 1 over g squared n corrections on both sides would be the same. So I'll present some examples of this sort of test. So the first and simplest test is just comparing the symmetries of the two theories. And so as we've heard, the isometry symmetries of the ADS cross-sphere solution can be identified with conformal symmetries and R symmetries on the field theory side, and also the full supergroup structure can be identified between the two sides. So this shows, for instance, in the D equals 4 case, that both theories are N equals 4 superconformal theories in four dimensions. But as Renata Kallas also mentioned yesterday, that does not prove that the two theories are the same. And also another symmetry that can be identified between the two theories is the SL2Z U-duality symmetry of the type 2B theory, which can be identified with the S-duality symmetry in the Supriang-Mills. A slightly more elaborate test is matching the anomalies between the two theories. So in the four-dimensional case, we have the usual axial anomaly. This theory has an SU4R symmetry for which the fermions are in Cauchy representations. And there is the usual axial anomaly. All the gluinos are charged under this R symmetry. And so this gives rise in a UM theory to a three-current correlator that is exactly equal to N squared, or an SUN theory to N squared minus 1. And as was first argued by Witten, then the same three-current correlator, if one computes it on the corresponding supergravity side, it's given by a Chern-Simons term in the five-dimensional supergravity. And the coefficient of this term is indeed n squared, so that the two anomalies indeed match for large n. Unfortunately, again, on the supergravity side, we do not really know how to compute finite n corrections to this term. So in particular, we can't really tell the difference between a UN theory and an SUN theory, which would have anomalies of n squared and n squared minus 1. There is also a similar anomaly in the six-dimensional case for the SO5R symmetry in that case, which on the supergravity side is proportional to n cubed. But unfortunately, in that case, we do not have any direct field theory way to compute this anomaly. so we cannot make a comparison. Similar to the anomaly, there seem to be many several other 2 and 3 point functions that also do not depend on z squared n, as we've heard, for instance, in Dan Friedman's talk. And so all these 2 and 3 point functions similarly give tests of the duality for large n and large z squared n. And I won't go into the details of that. The most elaborate test, perhaps, is the large n matching of chiral operators, which you've heard about in the previous talk and which I'll elaborate on in a bit more detail below. But what I would like to emphasize about all these tests is that, as I mentioned, they really only seem to test the fact that the theories are the same for large n and large z squared n. And also, in some sense, they seem to be guaranteed from the derivation of the duality, in the sense that they are guaranteed to work just from the fact that both theories arise from some theory of a brain coupled to the bulk field. For instance, the chiral operators in these theories may be identified with the couplings of the brains to the bulk supergravity field, and obviously it's obvious from the derivation that even if that these couplings would be the same on both theories, even if when we take the alpha prime to zero limit, then the theories are somehow not exactly the same. So in that sense, I think that these tests are perhaps not completely convincing, and one would like to find more elaborate tests in some way. Now, I'll describe briefly the matching of the chiral operators for the 3, 4, and 6 dimensional case. In all these cases, in field theory, so chiral primary operators are operators which are annihilated both by the special conformal transformations and by some of the supersymmetry transformations, and then using the superconformal algebra, one can relate their dimension to their R symmetry representation, proving that their dimension is not renormalized in any way. And on the field theory side, we know what the chiral operators are. So in the Young-Mills theory, we can just compute them. And in the six-dimensional case, we can compute them from the discrete vacuum quantization description of these theories. And in all these cases, the structure is basically the same. The chiral operators are always in small multiplets with spins ranging from 0 to 2. And in all these cases, the lowest component of these chiral multiplets is a real scalar in the symmetric spaceless representations of the corresponding R symmetry group, which is SO8, SO6, or SO5, respectively, where the symmetric traces representations appear for a product of fundamentals with a number ranging from 2 to n, say, in the SUN case. In the four-dimensional case, these real scalars are just the traces of products of the scalars in the vector multiplet in the Young-Mills theory. And only symmetric traceless products give rise to chiral fields, because contractions of indices turn out to be non-chiral fields, and commutators turn out to be descendants. Now, as Sergio also mentioned in the previous talk, all the other chiral fields are in the same multiplet, so that they are all descendants of this one chiral superfield. And in particular, this multiplet includes a spin 2 field, which is also in symmetric traces representations of the R symmetry group. Now, on the type 2B string theory or M theory side, we can identify all these fields with the Kaluza-Klein modes of the supergravity theory, which obviously also have spins ranging from 0 to 2. As an example, we can look at where are the spin 2 fields on both sides. So on the anti-de Sitter side, we get spin 2 fields from the reduction of the graviton fields. So we can take a graviton field on ADS5 cross S5, then we expand it in spherical harmonic, or in general on any ADS cross sphere. We expanded in spherical harmonics on the sphere, and this give, for any spherical harmonic on the sphere, we get a spin 2 field in the corresponding representation of the geometry group of the sphere. And since these spherical harmonics are exactly in symmetric traceless representations of the corresponding SO groups, then also on the string theory or M theory side, we find spin 2 fields in all the symmetric traceless representations of the R symmetry, so that the spin 2 fields immediately match between the two theories. And using supersymmetry, this means that all the chiral fields actually match between the two theories. And I have two more comments about this. First of all, as I mentioned, the field theory spectrum actually truncates at some maximal value of k, since the product of more than n fields is not independent. And it would be very interesting to understand this from the string theory or M theory side. In particular, this truncation happens at a value of the mass which is much bigger than the Planck scale, so we can't hope to understand this from supergravity, but it would be very interesting to find some other argument to explain this matching, which is perhaps a prediction of the finite M conjecture. And there are similar issues also in the ADS3 case that Andy mentioned yesterday. And one more comment is that in general, if we try to do this matching for orbifolds or antifolds of the N equals 4 theory, then most of the matching of buffers is trivially related to the matching of the n equals 4 keys, since we just do the same truncation on both sides of the duality. But as shown by Witten, there are additional operators in some orientifold cases, and in particular, if we take the duality for the SO2N theory, then in the gauge theory we have an additional tidal operator, which is the Pfaffian operator, and this can be identified on the string theory side with a 3-brain that's wrapped onto some 3-cycle in S5 mod Z2. So this is an additional independent test of the duality, and the special thing about this test is that we actually compare here an operator whose dimension is n. So this is really a test of the finite n duality, as opposed to the previous test, which only compared the spectrum for large n. And as far as I can see, this is actually the only test of the finite n duality so far. And there are similar states also in the 3- and 6-dimensional case, corresponding to wrapped fibrins and membranes, which are again in agreement with the field theory. Okay, so we can now try to make generalizations of this duality to other cases. In the n equals 4 case, as I've said, all the fields sit in the same multiplet, so the agreement between the two sides is not very elaborate. But if we go to n equals 2 supergraphical field theories, there is the possibility of having a more elaborate structure of Kalle multiplets, so that we can have more comparisons to make between the two theories. And this was done in these two papers that was recently published. So we can derive the same sort of ADS-CFT correspondence also for theories of 3-brains and F-theory. So it's been known for more than 2 years now that one can bring 3-brains to various 7-brain singularities, and at low energies one gets a conformal field theory on the 3-brain, and in particular this happens at these types of 7-brain singularities, which can be viewed as singularities in F-theory on K3, to which we bring a 3-brain. Now the 7-brain metric in these cases has a deficit angle, which takes these values corresponding to these cases. And we can again compute the metric for n 3-brains near the singularity and take the near horizon limit, just as was done in Valdesena's original paper. And what we basically find is that after we do this, we again end up with an ADS-5 space across a sphere, but where now the sphere has on it basically 7-brains which have a deficit angle around them. So we can write the metric of the sphere as the same metric on an S5, but with one of the angular variables having a periodicity that's smaller than 2 pi, in particular it's given by 2 pi times 1 minus alpha over 2 here, and with some monotomies for the fields around the circle. And then given this supergravity solution, we can again just... So we get a generalization of Molesano's conjecture, and we can again compare the Kalle operators on both sides. Where now the Kalle operators on the string theory side come both from the reduction of the supergravity modes on the sphere and also from the fields living on these 7-brain singularities that are wrapped around the sphere. So we get two types of states, and which we can compare to the field theory. Now the comparison. So I'll describe two particular examples of this comparison, and more details can be found in the papers. So one example is these fields is the fields I've mentioned that were originally in the ADS-5 versus 5 case the lowest component of the multiplet. So we have fields with dimension k for all integer values of k, and if one analyzes the same fields with a different periodicity now on the S5, one finds fields with dimensions that are k over 1 minus alpha over 2, so that we have a shifted spectrum, and in particular. And these fields can be identified with the Coulomb branch coordinates for the corresponding 3-brain theories, which also have the same dimension. These were computed, for instance, by Argyris, Plesser, Seibig, and Witten for some of these cases, and they can also be computed from F-theory for the other cases. And generally, we don't really know much about these conformal theories. For instance, the theory of 3-brains at an E6 singularity is a theory that has an E6 global symmetry, and we don't know how to write down a Lagrangian for this theory. And the only case where we really know what the field theory is here that we're comparing to is the case of 3-brains at a D4 singularity, which can be viewed as 4 7-brains sitting on an orientifold 7-plane. And in this case, the field theory is known to be a USP2N gauge theory with an antisymmetric hypermultiplet Y and 4 hypermultiplets in the fundamental representation Q. And the 7-brain fields here have spins ranging from 0 to 1, so that they are necessarily in short multiplets of the n equals 2 superconformal algebra, and therefore we must be able to identify them with the field theory. So we take the serum-rated fields, we reduce them, we write down their Kaluza Klein expansion on S3, like I showed for the graviton before. And we find, and so we find some spectrum of fields, and indeed the spectrum agrees with the field theory. For instance, the component arising from the reduction of the gauge field on the serum ring on the S3 can be identified in the field theory with fields of the form Q times Y to the K times Q. And again, there is a series of these fields corresponding to the series of spherical harmonics on the S3. And in particular, we can identify the global symmetry current in the field theory with the gauge field living on the serum rings, just like in some other cases. So again, this gives us a large n-test of the duality, just like in the previous case. And we can also discuss in this way many other theories of three rings near serum rings. So we can discuss theories with no supersymmetry, or n equals 1 or n equals 2 supersymmetry. And most of these theories have no Lagrangian description. But using this ABS-CFT correspondence, we get a prediction for the large n spectrum of operators. Now, I would like to end by describing a possible test that's work in progress, whose success does not seem to be guaranteed just from the brain derivation of the duality, or at least I don't know how to derive it in that way. And it's also a test that's more uses more dynamical properties of the gauge theories, unlike the previous tests I described that were essentially purely kinematical. And this test is the comparison of the exactly marginal deformations of the n equals 4, d equals 4 super Young Mills with the marginal deformations on the ADS 5 process 5 case. And this is work in progress with Shana Kachru and Eva Silverstein. And unlike previous speakers, I'm not willing to even speculate on when this work will actually appear. So in field theory, it's been proven by Lee and Strassler that the n equals 4, d equals 4 theory has two chiral deformations that are exactly marginal and that are given by this superpotential. And so it has two trilinear terms. And so this is written now in n equals 1 superfield language, where the n equals 4 theory has three adjunct chiral superfields. And it's been proven that these particular superpotential deformations are exactly marginal, so that there exists a three-dimensional surface of n equals 1 supergraphical field theories, which is parameterized by the gauge coupling G and by these two parameters, H1 and H2. Now, what should this correspond to on the string theory side, or on the lower energy supergravity side? So we know from the identification of the boundary values of supergravity fields with couplings to chiral operators that a marginal deformation of the conformal field theory corresponds to finding a solution of string theory or supergravity with the non-zero boundary values for some of the massless fields. And in this case, since we've identified the chiral operators, we can identify exactly which massless fields we want to turn on the boundary, and it turns out to be some internal component of the two firm fields B of the type 2B string theory. Now, the fact that this deformation is exactly marginal should mean that this deformed solution should not depend at all on the anti-de Sitter space coordinates. Namely, it should preserve the SO42 symmetry of anti-de Sitter space. And so we have here a very strong prediction of the duality conjecture, which is that there should exist a three-dimensional family of solutions to type 2B string theory, which are of the form anti-de Sitter space cross some internal space, and which all preserve the equivalent of n equals 1 superconformal field theory. And this test is a work in progress, so I can't let you know yet if it works or not, but I think this would be a somewhat stronger test of the duality than the previous tests. And in particular, the field theory arguments that we use here are finite end arguments. So this would certainly provide a test for us of the finite end duality. There may be some subtleties with these tests for large end, but at least but certainly if the finite end duality conjecture is true, then this makes a very strong prediction about the existence of solutions of the supergravity theory. So to summarize, I think I've tried to convince you that so far there haven't really been enough direct tests of the conjecture, and it's a challenge to the audience to try and find more tests of the conjecture. Thank you.
Questions for Ofer? Paul.
One point is that you required in the last transparency that you required an ADS symmetry, and you said as a result of that, the solution has to be ADS times the product. But you could have spaces, as I was describing yesterday, in fact, where the have an ADS symmetry, but the space is not the product of ADS. I mean, there are spaces that have the isometry for ADS that are not ADS.
Paul raises the point that there could be spaces that have the isometries of ADS space but are not ADS space.
That's right, and indeed, in principle, I think maybe we should try to examine that sort of solution as well. In this case, one can try to, but I think that won't be relevant for this case because we can actually try to construct these solutions perturbatively around the ADS 5 process 5 solution. We can turn on these deformations with small parameters and construct the solution order by order in the deformation. And when we do that, it seems like we really only turn on some internal space fields and we do not actually change the ADS space. So it's true that in general that might be possible, but I don't think it actually happens in this case.
Further questions? Oh, yes, Eva. The question is, in the three-brain, seven-brain case, whether the coupling is of order one in the conformal field theory?
So indeed, I was studying both types of cases. So we have either the case of D4 singularities, which can indeed exist at any value of the string coupling, and also in gauge theory, they correspond to D series at any value of the gauge coupling. And then we have the same structure as for the n equals 4 case, so we can take experiments of the truth limit of the gauge coupling and so on, and the same issues arise. But it seems like you can also, since the duality seems to work for any value of D-string, and in particular also for D-string of order 1, it seems like you can do the same thing also for these other types of singularities that are stuck at strong values of the string coupling. And then it should be really understood as a duality between these strongly coupled field theories and some F-theory backgrounds that have corresponding seven-brain singularities. And it's true that perhaps we don't know much about F-theory in this sort of backgrounds, but it looks like at least formally that the duality still works. And hopefully one can even learn things from it, even though I agree that it's not clear that we can actually control what happens on the string theory side here, since the string theory is certainly strongly coupled.
Steve.
The deformations that you wrote down, the superpotential would preserve n equals 1, correct?
That's right.
Are there deformations that would, or could there be deformations that preserve no supersymmetry that are marginal?
The question is whether there are marginal deformations that preserve no supersymmetry.
Well, there certainly are marginal deformations that preserve no supersymmetry, but there's no reason to expect that these would be exactly marginal. And when they're not, so certainly I can identify the marginal deformations between the two theories. That's just the identification of chiral operators, but I'm not sure which tests I can actually perform using these deformations.
Any more? Okay, let's thank Ofer again.